It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. It's a symphony of sports, and Bob McCowan is your conductor. Ever been smacked over the head with a conductor's baton? This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Number two for Primetime Sports on this Thursday. Bob McCowan and Elliot Friedman in our Toronto studios. Ken King will join us shortly, the president and CEO of the Calgary Sports and Entertainment Corporation. They announced at a press conference plans for a downtown arena / stadium
/ field house.
It would mark the end of the Saddledome and McMahon Stadium, I would assume. But it is also a $900 million project that the hockey / football club has committed about $200 million to.
Yeah, that's what they proposed. Now, the way I look at it, Bob, is that, you know, $250 million of it, I think, I don't know the number right in front of me, is a ticket tax. And to me, that's just them saying, we won't raise prices, we'll call it a ticket tax. So that doesn't really bother me a lot. The field house is an interesting one to me because the city had planned on building one. And the team is sort of saying, well, we'll do it as part of this, providing we get the $200 million. The mayor came out with a statement saying this project, yes, we wanted to build it, but it's so far unfunded. So that's going to be a negotiation. The other thing comes in the levy, a tax levy, and that is probably the most controversial part of the plan. I think it's $200 and something million, because if you go to these CRLs, as they're called, and research them, some people think they're okay. Some people find them really controversial. Basically, you're borrowing against the future gains you make in taxes from that land. So I have to tell you, I look at you look at this and you say, okay, they're putting in $200 million of a $900 million project. If you break it down, I think there's a lot of common ground there to get it done, but there's about a quarter to a half of it that's going to be an interesting negotiation.
I've always believed that when you have expenditures such as this that are proposed by the private sector, that ultimately will be paid for by the public, that there should be a referendum.
I don't have a problem with that. If you want to do a referendum,
not only do
anytime,
I not even have a problem with it, I think that should be mandated. I don't like political officials. I don't trust the process. I don't like political officials in situations like this, where there is a clear beneficiary. I don't like them making decisions on my behalf.
But that's what politicians do, right?
Well, I guess they do, but there is a clear beneficiary in the case of the Calgary Flames and the Calgary Stampeders. And that's what sets it apart. It is not a facility that everybody in Calgary would get use out of.
Well, the field house, yes, they would.
Well, okay. Theoretically, yes. But it's a small percentage of the overall
budget. It's a quarter of it, yeah.
Budget. I think that's what politicians should do. I think with the internet today, the cost of executing a referendum is negligible in the big picture. I'd like to see them go to the public and say, if you want to pay for this, vote yes. And here's what it's going to cost. Here's where these are the taxes that we are going to assign. And it should not come out of the general fund. It should come out of a specific fund that everybody pays an extra amount into. Now, that could be over a period of time. And I don't know, what are there, a million people in Calgary? Am I low on that? I don't know what the population of Calgary is. But let's say there's a million people in Calgary. let's assume that very few people outside of Calgary will use these facilities with any regularly. And I know that's not really true, but do the math. How many taxpayers do you have? What's the total cost over what period of time? What's it going to cost me? What's going to come out of my pocket on an annual basis for this? And I want it to appear on my, I want it to be on my tax return. I don't want it to be buried in the tax money that I give or increase it and don't tell me about it. I want to see it every year on my tax return. I'm paying $70 a year so that we can have these new facilities.
The other problem with this one, and your stance is very well known on this particular issue, there are two other parts to this here that are as yet unknown. Number one, the area that the Flames and the Stampeders are trying to get here needs an environmental cleanup. And it could be quite substantial.
Well, I'm assuming that's in the budget, is it not?
It's not. The city knows it has to do, well, no, but the city knows it has to do it. And I think this is going to be one of the big interesting things about it, is eventually the city is going to have to do it. But I wonder if in order to get the Flames and the Stampeders to do this, they might say, you have to pick up the tab. So that's going to be an interesting battle. And I always wonder, Bob, about cost overruns, too.
Well, all that. I mean, again, I...
Yeah, but you know
go
what?
To the public.
The environmental thing is something the city is going to have to do at some point anyway. That's got really nothing to do with
look,
the team.
Look, in principle, I am against public funds for private enterprise.
Yep.
I'm a sports fan. I like the fact that we have sports facilities. I think the franchises should pay for them themselves. And if they can't afford to pay for them themselves, we don't get them. I don't believe in public funding. But
yep.
I am willing to let
the city vote on it.
The city vote. Well, the taxpayers vote on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the same province, they're getting a new rink. And Edmonton.
You mean north of Calgary?
North of Calgary. Yes. The most northern National Hockey League outpost.
Yes, we get that. They're getting a lot more than a rink.
They're getting a big downtown area, which is being partially funded by the city and the by the city,
not by the province.
I want to say the province hasn't done it yet, but I'm not 100% on that. Somebody will tweet at me and tell me. But you know, Daryl Cates isn't putting in 100% of that.
Well, that makes me uncomfortable.
I know it does.
I don't like that idea.
You look at Ottawa, Bruce Firestone had to pay. I mean, there's one privately paid for off ramp in Ontario.
In Ottawa,
Bruce Firestone had to pay $22.5 million to do it.
Well, what
in Toronto here.
What public funding was used for the Air Canada Centre?
I covered that. They got a bit of the land. That was the issue.
Yeah.
They gave them land.
That doesn't bother me.
But other than that, they built it themselves.
Well, I think that's the way it ought to be. Don't you?
Montreal, I don't know if it's still the case, but for a long time, the Canadiens had the highest property tax bill in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still do, but they did for a while.
No, I know they did. It was over $10 million a year.
It was the largest one for a while.
Yeah.
But you know what?
All right, fine.
I'm just looking at this. It's interesting. Like, when you saw the mayor's statement the other day, it was pretty clear that he was saying, not no, but this is a negotiation. And judging from the comments Ken King made the other day, he knows this is the beginning of a negotiation.
Well, the other interesting thing is, and again, I don't live in Alberta, so I don't pretend to really understand the direct impact of the price of oil. But I know that it is having a significant impact on the resources that are being generated and the lifestyle, the jobs of many people. And is the timing wrong for this? But again, it is not for those of us sitting in Toronto to make that decision. It is for the people in Calgary. They are the ones, as long as the federal government or the Ontario government are not kicking in any money. I don't think it's for us to opine necessarily on a yay or nay. I don't need to have, I shouldn't have a vote. And my opinions on the Calgary situation are absolutely consistent with every other similar project that has been undertaken in this country, from the Pan Am Games to the Vancouver Olympics to everything in between. I believe the public, the general public, should have a say. And the only way to really get a say is to have a referendum. Lay out the exact costs, what it's going to cost for the whole project, and what does it mean to each individual taxpayer. Not just the users of the facility. If you want to state that the Calgary Flames and the Calgary Stampeders will execute a $20 a ticket tax.
And that is proposed as part of this.
$20 ticket?
I don't know how much it is per ticket, but there is a ticket tax to raise about a quarter of the money.
Well, again, if it's a user tax.
And that's, I have no problem with that.
I got no problem
with
that
either. That's basically them saying, look, we're not going to raise the ticket prices. We're just going to charge you a tax.
If you don't come to the games, you're not going to pay a nickel.
I don't have a problem
with that.
I am good with that.
But it doesn't seem that that's what they're proposing, and it doesn't seem that that's what's being proposed at any time.
It's a quarter of it. It's a quarter of it is the ticket tax.
Here's our friend Ken King, the president CEO of Calgary Sports and Entertainment Corporation, the proposers of this $890 million plan for a new hockey arena, covered football stadium, and multi-sport field house. Mr. King, how have you been?
Awesome. Did you miss me, Bob?
I've missed you passionately, Ken.
Hello, Elliot.
Hey, Ken. How you doing?
Good.
So our little conversation here has revolved around this, Mr. King, just so you're aware. I am of the opinion here that it is not for me, sitting in Toronto, not a taxpayer in the province of Alberta or the city of Calgary, to determine what the citizens of Calgary do or get for their money, but rather... why not just hold a referendum? Why not lay out all the costs on a table and say, this is what we're putting in, this is what we propose the public puts in, and here's what it's going to cost per person over X number of years to fund this, yes or no? What would be wrong with that?
You know what, that's not an unreasonable thought at all. I'm not proposing a referendum, but fundamentally it is a referendum. Political will is stimulated by public will. And we all know that. That's the way it works. If politicians feel the public will support something, generally en masse, so will they. If they think the prevailing wind blows against that, then they're going to be a little more skeptical. So essentially, that's what it is. And I love what you said, the proposer. This is a proposal. I said to our guys here, you know, if we got off a plane from London, Paris, or New York and said, we've got $450 million to invest in your city, we're thinking about this piece of property over here, would you like to talk to us? My guess is they would be bending over backwards to talk to us. Now, maybe it can't be a profit in your own country, maybe sports is different, but I caught your comments on the ticket tax, and I gather that you both thought that was a reasonable premise. I assume you are reasonable premises that the owners would put in private equity of $200 million. That leaves the other two legs. One's a field house. Have you talked about the field house?
Not much.
Just that, you know, that the city has proposed in the past building one, but it hasn't happened, and that Mayor Nenshi mentioned in his statement that it is as yet unfunded. That's all we mentioned.
Right. So for 30 years, there's been a group here called the Fieldhouse Society. We're the only serious city in Canada that doesn't have a field house. It's for amateur athletes, often for high-performance Olympic hopefuls and that type of thing. Summer athletes, 400-meter running track, courts, gymnasium, all that kind of stuff, and a soccer pitch. And that's $200 million. If we evaporate into thin air, that field house will be built here, and it will cost $200 million, give or take. So we say if nobody wants a field, and we didn't lay awake at night saying, well, let's build a field house. That priority came from the city. Now, unfunded is really not very clever code for it. It hasn't moved up the priority list. If our project moves it up the priority list, then that's great. If it can't, then obviously we can't do it. And then again, get to the last leg of the puzzle, which is a community revitalization levy. You're familiar with that. In the U.S., they call it a TIF, tax increment financing. Here we call it this. We've got a hugely successful one in the East Village here. Edmonton is using the same vehicle, same device, to great success. And that's taxes that would not otherwise exist. So there are your four legs. And we think it's a pretty fair deal. And most of the public we've talked to do. And now the political process will evaluate it and we'll see where it gets to.
You said, Ken, when you made your presentation the other day, you were asked some questions later, and you said if we get our shovel in the ground within 5 years, that would be something that would make you happy. And that says to me that, you know, your proposal is a stake in the ground, the mayor's statement is a stake in the ground, and now it's time to begin the negotiation. Now both sides start to go and seeing where is the common ground to get it done. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
That's, Elliot, a very fair way of it, except that I didn't say a shovel in the ground in 5 years. I said complete in 5 years. It's a three-year build.
I'm not known for accurately quoting people.
No. It's easy mistake. Now, that means at a gallop. Mm-hmm. That's 2 years of the kind of work that you just described quite accurately and quite appropriately, and then 3 year construction period, which is kind of the minimum. Now, let's assume that there's some problem that we haven't anticipated that takes place. So each one of those problems pushes you back 3 months, 6 months. So let's put a range on it. I don't want to put an outside range, but 5 years would be wonderful to cut the ribbon, and longer than that is conceivable.
With Ken King, the president and CEO of Calgary Sports and Entertainment Corporation. It would occur to me, Mr. King, that your timing here could be better, given the economy in the province of Alberta and the city of Calgary.
Think about it, Bob. But by the way, let me. I want to be very careful not to blow smoke here, but but you are unique among some of your colleagues in Toronto because I've talked to some of them. You said you don't live here, you don't pay the taxes here, so I applaud your objectivity on that. But all of the major initiatives, and I would point you directly to Detroit, who could not be in a greater economic malaise, who are looking at the Detroit Red Wings' massive project as one of the key stimulants in bringing that city back. So I guess I would tell you that World's Fairs since the 20s and throughout time all have almost always the Olympics here were incubated in a very difficult time. So the incubation period often is when things are tough because you want to do something to push the economy or help the economy.
Yeah, you're going to lose me on that one, Ken, though. Because I have a hard time being convinced that something that's good for the Calgary Flames and Calgary Stampeders is good for the people, for all the residents in Calgary. And I understand the theoretical of that, the theoretics of that. But I would say if you commission the 20,000 people that go to your hockey games, give or take, and the 20,000 people that go to football games, give or take.
30,000.
Fine. Their support for the project would probably be significant, well more than a majority, maybe close to 100%. My interest is that is a relatively small percentage of the entire population, and I don't begin to understand how many people are impacted positively by a new arena and a new stadium for two sports teams that they only watch on television. I don't know what that means. So I'm saying, why not go to the public? Why not go to everybody and say, this is what it's going to cost. Will you kick in?
But, Bob, that's essentially what we did. When I spoke with the 2,000 people I spoke with, I said, for the next several months, we're going to ask one question. Is this good for Calgary and is it good for Calgarians? And if the answer to that is affirmative, then we're going to try to do this. We're going to say, okay, good deal, signed, sealed, and delivered.
Gotcha.
Because we got 20 miles of bad road here to get through. And I used, there's a $200 million public library being built here. I asked the group, I said, how many of you are going to use that library, a handful. I said, how many of you, like me, are proud as punch and happy as a clam that we're spending $200 million to build the library? Almost all of them. You don't have to use a field house to appreciate it. We're spending $1.3 billion on an expansion of our airport. That's a really important part of the fabric of our city, access egress from an airport standpoint. It'd be one of the greatest airports in Canada. Now, there's people who will never see that airport, lots of people that will never see that airport. So I think the notion that this is exclusive to and by the way, it's not 20,000 and 30,000. It's you need, and I think you guys have even said this on your program, you need a million people just as an entry fee to be in professional sports.
Gotcha.
Just to get going.
Yeah.
So that and again, that's my argument. I'm clearly biased, but clearly not trying to sell something that I don't think can work. I mean, I've lived here for 30 years, and God willing, I'll live here for another 30 years. And our ownership group are really awesome citizens. They can't trot in here and say, hey, let's see if we can sneak around downtown and do a deal here that's a benefit to us and not a benefit to anybody else. If this isn't viewed as a benefit to the city and Southern Alberta as a whole, it's dead. Simple deal.
Ken, during Edmonton's desire to get a building, there was a very clumsy threat by the owner made about potentially moving to Seattle. Please restore my faith in humanity and tell me that nobody is going to say the Calgary Flames will be moving to Seattle if no arena gets built.
Well, somebody else asked me that question. That's not on the table. That is a clumsy negotiating tactic. And up until and to the day that you say, hey, we've exhausted ourselves here, we can't survive here anymore, bye, and you don't make a threat of that. It's obvious. I mean, it was obvious in Winnipeg when it was in a waning period, and I'm happy as a clam that it's back there, and I hope it continues to work. I think there are much more effective ways to communicate than to be a bully or to threaten.
The site that you're talking about needs a cleanup.
Yeah.
The cost of that cleanup has been estimated at anywhere from $50 to $300 million. That's an interesting
variance
in numbers.
A bit of a range, yeah.
You'd think somebody would have a better handle on it than that. But nonetheless, are there alternative sites? Why did you pick this site?
Actually, part of the reason we picked the site was because of the contamination. That's going to be a gift when that contamination gets cleaned up. And let me say, I met with the city people today. We brought attention to a decades-old problem. They were treating railroad ties there since 1924 to the 60s. It has been economically sterilized land for 40 years. And nobody was paying any attention to it. Half the people didn't even know it had a problem. But it's a beautiful, beautiful bookend to our downtown city. So I would say this, worst case scenario, our project, which I fervently hope will succeed, but if it didn't, that's going to get cleaned up anyway. It has to be cleaned up. And actually everybody now is acknowledging that we've shone a light on it and they've said, hey, we have to do it. Now, $50 to $300 million, we have consultants, CMLC, Calgary Municipal Land Corporation, is hiring consultants. There's lots of ways to do it. We went to visit the Minnesota Vikings' new home. Gosh, you want to see something, have a look at that, at $1.3 billion. But as it turns out, in Minnesota, there's a whole bunch of creosote brownfields, and we've talked to some experts there. They all would say, you know what, it's not quite as complicated as people want to think, and it's not quite as costly. Now, I don't know if that's going to turn out to be true in this case, but the simple matter is, and I take the same tack with that as I take with everything else, if somebody says you can't do it, then we can't do it. Simple. But imagine how wonderful it would be to take a brownfield site and put our project on it and get that whole area of our city going. It's to die for.
Let me ask you a question that I think would probably could be considered fairly sensitive in the province of Alberta.
Okay.
We envision a a competition at every level between the cities of Edmonton and Calgary. If you got it, we got to have it. If we got it, they got to have it. One of those kinds of scenarios. Is it just me, or are you looking at what the Oilers et al. Are doing in Edmonton enviously and saying, well, why can't we have that?
No. I don't. The one thing there is no argument about. So first off, let me plead the fifth. I'm not going to incriminate myself, but and that is not the reason. The one thing there is no argument about is that Edmonton needed a new arena. Would that be fair to both of you?
Yes.
Yes.
And there's no argument here that we need a new football stadium, that we need a new arena, and other people have determined that we need a field house. So no. I was asked that same question earlier by an Edmonton radio station, frankly. And
well, that makes sense.
Are making it bigger than ours. Are you making it bigger and better than ours because it's some sort of a contest? No, we're making it what it is because this is what we need in Calgary. If we had Commonwealth Stadium in Calgary, we wouldn't even be talking about a stadium. If we had a field house in Calgary, we wouldn't be talking about a field house.
My understanding is that the size of the arena itself is approximately what the Saddledome is.
Same size. My
more or less.
That is, we don't need almost identical. We don't need bigger. We need better. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been in it, Bob, very much, but Elliot's been in it frequently. This is all about ergonomics. The future of professional sport and audience participation is having absolutely advanced technological opportunities there. Great access, egress, great amenities, all of those things. If we're going to continue to have these places be the largest gathering places in our cities, we're going to have to make them ergonomically superb. So not bigger, better.
Ken, it's been a few days now since you first presented your proposal and the mayor released his statement. With a bit of hindsight now, objectively, from what you've heard on both sides of the argument, what do you think the chances are this happens?
I think, what's that great line in that stupid movie? So you're saying we got a chance.
Yeah.
Are you saying one in a million? Yes. No. It's Dumb and Dumber. Yes, yeah, so you're saying you've got a chance. Yes.
I don't want to admit that I know that.
every guy has watched Dumb and Dumber 500 times.
So what I'm saying is I think we launched the proposal. I was over at City Hall today again. What I think is we have a reasonable chance of success. That's a huge, massive step up from no money for anything to do with sports. And I'll take that. And I said at our presentations, I said at the press conference, this thing is a mile deep with challenges and issues. Anyway, even if we all agreed and said, okay, we have to do this, the creosote and all of the other issues are huge. So it's a very ambitious. I think we can. If we didn't think we could do it, we wouldn't have proposed it. We're not alone. We're not the final arbiters of what happens in these things. But I would say the answer to your question, Elliot, is I'm feeling pretty good on behalf of the organization that we've got a good start here. And the operative word is, as Bob used early, proposal, and the operative word is start.
Just quick,
where it gets to.
Just quick follow-up from there. Ken, you said you were at the city today. Any news from it?
No, other than what we're doing is we're assembling the files, the creosote file, the community revitalization levy file. All of those files are interdependent. So if you think about it, mm-hmm. Each one depends on the other, but you don't want to wait. We don't want to wait a year to find out if the creosote can be solved. So we'll work everything in parallel. That's kind of my business practice anyway. And until and if we are pushed off of our goal, we'll keep forwarding the notion and until something is sufficiently compelling that says, hey, it looks like this may not work, and I hope that day does not come.
If I were a citizen of the city of Calgary, what would it cost me for you to build Disneyland here?
If you went to the game, it would cost you a...
No. What's it going to cost me to build this thing? What is it going to cost for one citizen, one taxpayer? How much...
That's a good question, Bob. I don't know the answer to that question, but... If and here's another question I should know the answer to. And if I was a guy who was prone to hype, which I am not, I hope you both give me credit for that, I would say not how much will it cost me, how much will it benefit me? What do I get from this? Because of tourism, because of future tax base from the development, because of enhanced investment, and more jobs, whether it be $900 million worth of construction trade jobs or otherwise, and the ancillary things that, and employment that follows from that. So that's, you ask your question, which is a very fair question.
Yeah,
And I'll ask my question on the other side of it, which is, and you know what? You know, the answer lies somewhere in between.
Yeah, see, that's where you lose me. You see, in the political, you know, what jobs we gain, and this is what, you know, this is how it helps our city, and we need to do these things, and da da da. And I say, okay, that's fine. I get all that. How much? How much do you want? How much from Joe Taxpayer, one guy, spread out over how many years? How many bucks are we talking? Over 30 years, I'm going to tax you $20. It's going to cost you $20. And if that's what you're talking about,
no, but
now we can have a conversation.
Oh, just a minute. Technically, if you accept the fact that the community, you get that we can isolate the CRL, right?
Yep.
Because that's taxes that you, as Joe Citizen and Joan Citizen, are not paying, right?
All right.
Okay, that leaves you $200 million for a field house. How much does each citizen in this city pay because we spent $200 million for a library? Which we're fine with. We're good with it. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, but I'd argued with you over the library, too, so forget the library. Let's talk about this project.
Bob hasn't read a book anywhere but off an iPad in a decade.
You know, I mean, again, it's all these, everybody's got a notion of a project, and this is what we need, and this is what we want, and I hear the same things. I've been listening to these things for 40 years, Ken, and the same kinds of sophisticated, generic, non-specific arguments for why we need it. All I'm asking is one question. How much?
You got 40 years worth of research. Tell me how it worked in L.A. How's it worked in Los Angeles?
Well, did they ask
how's
any?
It worked in Columbus? How's it worked in Minnesota? How has it worked in Winnipeg? How is it, I don't know what the model is for Quebec. I'll put the question back to you. I think there is strong evidence to support that it's more positive than negative. And were I more clairvoyant, I would love to throw out some beautiful answer that it's $12 or $12.
Well, I want to answer your question. And I want to answer your question because I live in the city of Toronto, and this is where I pay my taxes, and this is where I'm most familiar with the scenario. I was here when they proposed building SkyDome. And I was told it was going to cost $170 million, and it cost $700 million, and ultimately was sold for
$550 million, I think.
You know, really? I would debate that, but, you know, and then it was sold for $50 million. So what was the inherent value of that? On the other hand,
I cannot argue that.
Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, who have gone to the political well more than a few times in their history, built their arena without public funding.
So did Montreal.
So, be done.
If we had a 5 million market like you do,
or
most of the French market like Montreal does, that's exactly where we would be. The reason Edmonton's building is a private-public partnership, and the reason our building is a private-public partnership, and the reason we even have these teams is because of the beneficence of the owners. Thank you, Harley and Doc, and now Murray and all of his partners and Daryl Katz. That's part of the reason we have them, and part of the reason is because we can have a public partnership in markets that are,
I get it,
in any other place too small to support them.
We could go on and on and on.
Let's do it some more. That'd be fun. I'll come to Toronto. We can have a cage match or something.
I'll take you down and show you what you can build if you use your own money. And by the way, if they kick you out of Calgary, the Flames can come here as a second team in Toronto. We'll welcome them with open arms, and we'll build you an arena.
Can you just check that out with Mr. Tannenbaum and his associates?
I'm not the least bit interested in what Larry has to say about it. Thank you, Mr. King.
Thank you, boys.
Take care.
Ken King, the president and CEO of Calgary Sports and Entertainment Corporation. I love jabbing with him. When we come back, what now for Northwestern football? The team decided to form a union. They got initial approval, and then the National Labor Relations Board shot them down. Is that the end of the story? We'll ask Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports when primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, it's prime time. McCowan Friedman. Why spend time worrying about or discussing even the Northwestern football team's bid to form a union, essentially rejected by the National Labor Relations Board? And it's a good question. And the answer specifically is a topic we've been discussing for many years. Should college football players be entitled to get paid?
By the way, Bob, after the last interview and now this one, people are going to think we've turned into like Socialist Hour on Fan 590.
Well, I have socialist tendencies from time to time.
Yeah, sure you do.
Well, I just want the public to vote, that's all. Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports joins us to address this situation. Well, why should we be interested in this, Patrick? Why as football fans, college football fans, whatever fans of any sport, why should we be concerned as to whether Northwestern gets to unionize or not?
You know, the great question. It does sound like we have a couple of socialists here, so das vidanya, comrade. let me try to address it. This is a piece and a part of this bigger argument, debate, fight, battle that is going on in college sports right now over amateurism.
Sure.
You know, as we saw with the Ed O'Bannon case, which is being appealed right now by the NCAA,
right,
that's putting some cracks into the whole idea that college athletes are, quote-unquote, student-athlete amateurs who cannot be paid, cannot be compensated beyond scholarships. What we're seeing with some other antitrust cases that are coming down the pike, that's starting to blow that open even more. What we were seeing is this Northwestern unionization bid. But the thing that people forget, they hear the word union, and they get fixated on that. They forget. In order to have the question put out there, you know, can we unionize? What had to be answered was, do you qualify as employees of a school?
Mm-hmm.
And in that original decision we saw with this Northwestern unionization bid, the regional director of National Labor Relations Board, he looked at the evidence, he took testimony, and he decided, wait a second, you guys football players? You're student athletes in name only. That's just a term, but I'm looking at what you do. You guys are absolutely university employees. So go ahead and have your unionization vote. But the really important part of it was qualifying what they do as labor, as work. It's not just you guys are university students who happen to be good at football and just happen to be out there playing every week for millions of dollars that you never see. It's like you guys are working. That was what this was really about. And what was so weird, it's almost so cowardly about the national office of the National Labor Relations Board, is that when they were asked to review this regional decision, they essentially decided to not decide. They didn't necessarily reject the idea that these guys are actually working or that they qualify as labor, whether they should be able to unionize. They said, we're not going to actually answer that question. We're going to just decline jurisdiction on this. It's not even a punt, guys. It's that they didn't even suit up and take the field.
But
really weird decision.
Why, though? Why do you think they made that decision?
That's also a really good question. I think that there was – I live in Washington, D.C. I think that there was – I cannot give you an example, but I really think there was a lot of behind-the-scenes political pressure here. I think that – look, when we're talking about the NCAA and all its member schools down here in the States – I mean, you're talking about these huge public institutions. You're talking about these alma maters. You're talking about a lot of political power, a lot of power that could be brought to bear on Capitol Hill, could be brought to bear in Washington, like we brought to bear on a National Labor Relations Board that is made up of political appointees. One of the really interesting things here is that it was thought that this case was brought right now because that board is dominated by Obama appointees, liberal, who you would think are more sympathetic to labor. And
yes,
generally their decisions, they have been more sympathetic.
Right.
But in this case, there was there's this weird thing where when you're talking about college sports, you're talking about amateurs, you're talking about tradition and how much people love football. All the NCAA ever has to do is say, hey, if you guys change any of this, if you rock the boat at all, you're going to ruin this thing we all love. That's the constant message. Even in their appeals on this case, the NCAA put in all sorts of briefs saying that. You're going to ruin this thing we love. And in their weird decision to not decide, the board actually seemed to say, and it's really logically convoluted, so bear with me. They seem to say, if we were to take up this question, does this qualify our work or not? Are these players laboring or not? If we were to answer it, it would disrupt the labor market that already exists there, and that's against our mission, which is a tacit admission that this is labor. So it's really crazy, but that's what they say. Basically,
wow,
if we decide this and let these kids unionize, then it would be different at public schools. It would be different at other schools. We might throw some sort of monkey wrench into college football, so we're not going to do that.
We're a little
really
tight.
Weird.
We're a little tight for time here, and I want to get this question in here. Do you believe the Northwestern situation is dead?
Well, it's definitely dead at Northwestern. I don't think you'll see another group of players try to do this. The board said because we didn't decide, this is open. Someone else could do this. I think it's going to be very discouraging for future groups of football players or basketball players at other schools, whether it's private schools like Northwestern, so they go to the national board, or public schools, and they go to these state boards in various American states. But I don't think it's impossible. And the fight, the bigger fight over amateurism, absolutely is not over at all. These big antitrust cases are coming. They're falling on O'Bannon. Whether or not the O'Bannon case is upheld in appeal or overturned, those cases threaten to blow the whole thing open. All of this ultimately, it's a lot of jockeying for leverage. I do think this issue will ultimately be decided in the U.S. Congress. It'll be decided with lawmakers, maybe a presidential commission. But there's going to have to be some sort of reordering, some sort of change to the current economic system in college sports. There's too much money. It's too unfair. There's too much pressure. It can't. The status quo can't last.
You know, the one question I had for you, Patrick, was I understand the players had the right to vote on whether or not to accept being unionized. Does anybody know what the results of those were?
We don't, and we'll never know because the votes are now going to get destroyed. There was a lot of thought and talk of people that had sort of tried to informally poll the players afterwards.
Yeah,
that the players actually voted no.
And
part of that is because the school came in with a very heavy campaign on these players. It was rumored, I mean, the school itself, their coaches told them they shouldn't do this. It was rumored that alumni were coming in and saying, if you vote for this, you know, you're not going to get jobs, you're not going to get networks, it's not all going to dry up.
In essence, they threatened them. They threatened them.
Yeah, there was union busting. This is what happened.
That's exactly what happened.
Right?
Yeah, sure. You know, we understand that. Mm-hmm. We're a little tight on time.
But you know, the other thing that's interesting about that, and everybody should know, the best possible outcome would have been if the players had voted no on actually forming a union, but the National Labor Board had said, you guys qualify as employees, that would have been the most helpful thing for this whole movement of these college athletes to get full economic rights going forward, because now would it be in a piece of federal labor law, hey, look at this. We actually count as employees. What we do is work. They could point to that in these other cases, and it would help bolster what they're trying to accomplish.
Patrick, we're out of time. We thank you, as always, for taking the opportunity to chat with us, and we'll watch with interest. I don't think this situation is dead by any stretch of the imagination, but I can't even imagine what the next step is going to be here. Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports. In the next hour, Masai Ujiri, president of basketball ops, general manager of the Toronto Raptors. They signed Jonas Valanciunas to a four-year extension worth about $64 million, $16 million per year. Now what? And Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun on baseball stuff when Primetime Sports continues.